The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
Being a writer doesn't have to mean that you have a cool haircut and you live in Brooklyn and you, you know, go to fancy literary parties. It can mean that you're just someone who enjoys making up stories and, like, you don't even have to publish them. You can just have fun making up your own stories. But I think that, you know, for people who are trying to be writers, it's really good to remember to take pleasure from this when you can. A lot of what I talk about in the book is just letting yourself get lost in the fictional world that you're setting up and just sort of giving yourself permission to have fun with it. And I think that the playfulness is a big part of what I really push in the book. The idea that, like, playfulness is good, you know, having fun with this is good. And, you know, that playfulness in some ways can help you to be better at surviving the really hard times that are happening.
Greetings, scribes, and welcome back to The Writer Files. I'm your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you wisdom, words, and wherewithal per usual. Decorated sci-fi and YA author and pundit Charlie Jane Anders chatted with me about the genesis of storytelling, how to weather 20 years of rejection, right through hard times, and her latest how-to for writers never say you can't survive. Charlie Jane's novel Victory is Greater Than Death, the first in a YA trilogy, came out this April, and she's the author of the 2019 Locus Award winner The City in the Middle of the Night, named one of the year's best books by The Guardian and others, an option for TV by Sony. Her 2016 novel, All the Birds in the Sky, was number 5 on Time magazine's list of the year's 10 best novels and won the Nebula, Locus, and Crawford Awards. Her latest is Never Say You Can't Survive, a book about how to use creative writing to get through hard times. It's described as a practical guide to storytelling and a manual for creativity in unprecedented times. Charlie Jane's fiction and journalism have appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Slate, McSweeney's, Mother Jones, the Boston Review, Tor.com, Tin House, Wired, and many others. Her TED Talk, Go Ahead, Dream About the Future, has been viewed over 2 million times, and she also co-hosts the Hugo Award-winning podcast, Our Opinions Are Correct, with Annalee Newitz. In this file, Charlie Jane and I discussed the importance of why we all contain multitudes. Imposter syndrome and rubbing elbows with famous authors, her creative chameleon characteristics, and why writers need to juxtapose the small and personal against the huge and epic. Stay calm and write on. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. All right, we are rolling on The Writer Files, and I am honored today to be joined by none other than award-winning author, Charlie Jane Anders. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Really appreciate it. I know you're a busy writer, author. You know, you're probably doing a lot of promotion and or at least getting ready for this next baby to be born.
Yeah, it's so awesome to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I love your podcast, and it's just so great to any chance to sort of geek out about writing, I get really excited about. So I'm really stoked to be here.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's definitely a pleasure to have you on. I was enjoying your podcast as well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you've been doing the podcast thing, it seems, for quite some time yourself. So you're no stranger to the microphone, but let's turn back the clock, and I know you enjoy a good superhero origin story,
right?
Which will dovetail nicely into your most recent nonfiction. But turn back the clock a little bit, because you've been rubbing authors. That could be a podcast.
That would be a very different conversation. I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll be rubbing authors out like a gangster. Like, let's rub him out. Yeah, that author, he's using too many metaphors. Let's rub him out. I don't know.
I like it. So you've been rubbing elbows with, you know, some incredibly famous authors and, you know, doing this thing for years. But talk a little bit about, take us back a little bit to the origins of, back to when you were just writing short stories and doing the IO9 stuff. And turn back the clock a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I've been kind of trying to make a career out of writing fiction for, you know, I would say like 20 years. It's been like 20 years of just really kind of plugging away, trying to get things published and racking up just like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rejections along the way. Including, you know, I in addition to writing, you know, just a ton of short stories, like more than I can possibly, I think I've probably written at least a couple hundred at this point. Writing, in addition to writing just a ton of short stories and getting and really kind of just like trying to hone that ability. I did write a bunch of novels before I finally kind of struck gold with All the Birds of the Sky in 2016. There were 5 completed novels before All the Birds of the Sky, like completed, polished, revised, you know, shown to beta readers, you know, revised again and again. And finally, you know, one of those 5 previous novels was published by a small press, but the other 4 kind of just went into the place where novels go when, you know, they're not going to get to live. So, yeah, but it took a really long time for me to become an overnight success, I guess, you know?
Yeah. But as you talk about kind of the importance of perseverance and, you know, by now it's as if you've won every, you know, every award in the fantasy and sci-fi and speculative fiction genres. And you know, you're still kind of doing different stuff and trying out different genres. You know, I guess you're probably in the throes of this YA trilogy right now. And now now we're going to talk about a nonfiction book, but talk a little bit about, you know, as you put it, you know, how we're kind of all these multitudes, but especially I think writers who are really committed to kind of making a living doing this thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that the thing about having a career as a creative person, or even if it's not like what you're planning on doing to support yourself and pay your rent or your mortgage or whatever, it's still, if it's something that you're like, you want to do as you like a life goal, as you're like, I'm going to really try to get published and try to like, you know, get a significant readership for my stuff. Even if you're self-publishing, that's still the case. You know, you have to kind of be flexible. You have to be a little bit of a chameleon. You have to be willing to kind of, you know, just keep trying different things and see what works. And like, you know, I wrote a bunch of different novels that were kind of very different from each other. They were different styles. They were different kind of genres or approaches to genre. And, you know, it kind of was a process of trial and error, as well as a process of kind of honing my craft, until I got to, you know, All the Birds of the Sky, which was a book that just felt like me. It felt like the right book for me. It felt like a book that was kind of speaking to and for me in a way that, you know, some of my previous attempts at writing a novel maybe hadn't quite as much. It's just, you never know what's going to be successful. And you just, this is part of why I really got in the habit of just sending out just a ton of short stories and trying different things and just sending them out, because you just never know what's going to hit. You know, you could randomly send out something that you just are like, this was an interesting experiment. And people are like, oh my gosh, we love this. And, you know, please do more of this. And I don't know, you kind of have to be a little bit like a troubadour or whatever, where you're just going around doing your ballads for people. And, you know, if people really liked a particular ballad, then you're like, okay, I'm going to do more like that one, I guess. I don't know. You got to be flexible while also honing your own unique voice and your own kind of style and your own approach, you know?
Yeah. It would seem that kind of creative chameleonism is really part and parcel with finding your voice, as you said.
Yeah. And, you know, in the book that you mentioned, which comes out pretty soon, Never Say You Can't Survive, I do kind of talk about, you know, how you have to like both, you know, find your own unique voice and find the story that only you could have written, like write the story that's yours, that's only yours. But you also have to not, you know, you have to not be too precious about your ideas or about your, and you have to experiment, play around. Like once, especially if you're in a place where you haven't yet gotten known for a particular thing, you haven't yet kind of gotten a thing that you're like, well, my stories usually have this, this, and this in them. You know, take advantage of the freedom of being, you know, a newer writer and just try everything. Try different genres, try different styles, try different stuff. And, you know, I talk in the book, in Never Say You Can't Survive, I talk about like how, you know, when you're starting a new story, when you're starting a new project, think of it as going on a first date and like be like, yeah. Well, you know, maybe this is going to lead to something. Maybe this won't. I'm just going to try it and see what happens. And like, don't feel bad if you start writing something and then after a couple of pages, you're like, you know what? This isn't the thing. I'm going to try something else. You know, it's absolutely good to keep it loose, especially while you have that flexibility.
I think, yeah, just digging in a little bit more, doesn't it seem like this is maybe the most important time for Never Say You Can't Survive to come out? Because, you know, a lot of writers are struggling. I hear this a lot. And we talk to many, many authors about how they're surviving this interesting time in history and these kind of, you know, it's not just the pandemic. You know, I know you are at least familiar with Sarah Pinsker and her work. And
I listened to the episode of yours that she was on. That was amazing.
And we kind of talked a little bit about her novel that kind of, was predictive in a way. The kind of the before times and the after times, but I keep asking people this, are there really after times? It doesn't really seem like they're coming anytime soon.
I mean, unfortunately, in terms of both the pandemic and in terms of like the political polarization and instability that we've been experiencing, you know, for the last 5 years, I think that neither one of those things is over and they're not going to be over for a while. And, you know, unfortunately, not to get too heavy, I think I'm actually more scared and worried now than at any point in the last 5 years, just because of the way things seem to be going. Yeah. So I think this is a really good time for, obviously, I'd love it if people bought my book, but for the kind of approach to writing that I'm recommending. And, you know, I think that my book, I would love it if people who don't consider themselves writers also gave my book a shot, because I think part of what my book is doing is saying, look, being a writer doesn't have to mean that you have a cool haircut and you live in Brooklyn and you, you know, go to fancy literary parties. It can mean that you're just someone who enjoys making up stories and like, you don't even have to publish them. You can just have fun making up your own stories. But I think that, you know, for people who are trying to be writers, it's really good to remember to take pleasure from this when you can, to, you know, part of a lot of what I talk about in the book is just letting yourself get lost in this fictional world that you're setting up and just sort of giving yourself permission to have fun with it. And I think that the playfulness is a big part of what I really push in the book. The idea that like playfulness is good, you know, having fun with this is good. And you know, that playfulness in some ways can help you to be better at surviving the really hard times that are happening, because it enables you to kind of have a little bit more flexibility in how you think about stuff. It allows you to kind of be able to escape when you need to into like a more kind of fun, playful headspace. And it just allows you to kind of see beyond the immediate kind of tunnel vision of the terrible moment that we're living through right now, which I think are all really valuable things to have. So, you know, I do actually think, you know, there was a part of me that was worried with Never Say You Can't Survive. I was posting those essays online in 2020, and part of me was like, well, maybe when the book comes out in 2021, things will have gotten better to the point where people won't feel like this book is relevant anymore. And I no longer worry about that. I'm no longer worried that we're going to worried is not the right word, because I would have been overjoyed, but I no longer think that it's a concern that we might have gotten past the need for a book about how to survive hard times.
Yeah, right. It's this, as we've talked about often, this kind of these concentric circles of crises. The pandemic is only like one hub of that wheel, but you know, I mean, I guess there have been tougher times in history.
Yeah, I mean, there
are
definitely
times when we were less connected, I think. But as you put it, you know, storytelling being that kind of connective tissue that we really need. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of this universal glue that's always somehow gotten us through, right? And we've done it together, not alone.
Yeah, and I think that is really good. And I think part of what storytelling can do is show us how we're all connected and kind of help us to see how we are all tied to each other. And I think that, you know, a thing that something that increases your capacity for empathy, something that increases your capacity to kind of see other people as, you know, having their own inner lives and, you know, not just being, you know, NPCs in your story or whatever is a really valuable thing. I also think that, you know, part of living through, like, I loved what you said about concentric circles of crises, because I think that's really accurate. And it kind of goes to something that I talk about in Never Say You Can't Survive, which is mm-hmm. that, you know, when you're living through something really extreme and scary and messed up, when there's, like, for example, a plague, but also wildfires and, like, toxic smoke, you know, blowing through the air, and yeah. you know,
floods
and also, like, political nightmares,
locusts.
You know, it's easy to just get trapped in the immediate kind of panic of the moment, right. and it can be really helpful to, like, pull back and see, like, a larger picture and see, like, okay, these are the decisions that we made, you know, in some cases decades ago that are leading to what we're having now. These are the things, these are the larger forces at play here. These are the kind of bigger issues that are kind of being, that are at stake in this scenario. And it's not just, things somehow suddenly went really wrong and terrible for out of nowhere. It's there's a larger picture to be seen, and it can be both comforting and, you know, helpful in terms of taking action to see the larger mm-hmm. picture. That's a thing that fiction and storytelling generally is really good at doing. Like, yep. you know, you have this vogue right now for novels where, you know, it jumps around in time, sometimes hundreds of years. Like, I feel like there's a bunch of novels in that kind of Cloud Atlas
sure.
framework, where it's like, okay, 500 years ago, this happened. Right now, this is happening. 500 years from now, this is happening. And it's like, okay, juxtaposing all these different time frames actually is really helpful in terms of getting some perspective on the now.
Reading fiction has been proven to help develop empathy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, as you kind of touch on in the book, writing fiction is probably just as important for kind of developing our own sense of self. But then, yeah, how else can we talk really about, in such a polarized time in history, how else can we talk to our fellow, you know, human beings without
yeah.
kind of like making it some sort of a, you know, like a metaphor for what's happening? Because people are just so like, they're just like fireworks about to be set off if you say the wrong thing, or if you, you know, approach something head on.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are really traumatized right now, and yeah. it's hard when you're traumatized to kind of, you go into survival mode, you go into kind of, you know, you kind of hunker down and you kind of try to just, you know, protect yourself any way you can emotionally and physically. And yeah. at the same time, it's like, everything is just kind of, yeah, everything is total chaos and we're all really on edge. And, you know, we're also kind of starting to grapple with these giant system, well, making a token attempt at least to grapple with these systemic injustices that have been going yeah. on forever. And that's really raw. It's really hard work. It's work that is going to make people on edge. It's going to actually add to the, it's going to make people more aware of things that they've maybe shrugged off in the past. And it's just, you know, it's going to make everybody, it's going to make it our communication in general more fraught, because we're having these conversations that are really hard and that are really touchy. And I think part of what fiction does and can do is, you know, like I said before, give us some perspective, but also just like enable us to kind of deal with that trauma and that upset and all of that, you know, all of that deeply entrenched injustice. Mm-hmm. In ways that are somewhat removed from the immediate present and the immediate moment. And that's also really helpful, I think. You know, I think that we need to be able to kind of connect to that. And I also think, you know, I say this a lot, but there's a reason why politicians are obsessed with, quote unquote, controlling the narrative. Like, they understand that our world is made out of stories, and that yep. we treat anecdotal evidence way more seriously than we do, you know, statistical evidence, even though statistical evidence, it's more rational, I guess, to like, you know, like, you could be like, well, I have this really compelling emotional story about a guy who, you know, ate a hot dog and choked to death. So therefore, nobody should ever eat hot dogs again. And you can be like, well, statistically speaking, you're more likely to be hit by lightning than to choke to death on a hot dog. But people are, if the story about the guy who choked to death on a hot dog is compelling enough, nobody's going to care about the statistical likelihood of actually choking to death on a hot dog.
Yeah. So I'm just going to read kind of a part of the description of the book here. And of course, I will link to all the things, your home base, the book, and your socials there. And never say you can't survive. You know, things are scary right now. We're all being swept along by a tidal wave of history, and it's easy to feel helpless, but we're not helpless. We have minds and imaginations and the ability to visualize other worlds and valiant struggles. And writing can be an act of resistance. I love that. There are other futures and other ways of living. Yeah, I think it's a really important message right now, and I appreciate the work. I'm enjoying it very much. I think, you know, as there are a lot of like books about creativity that are, you know, aren't necessarily for writers per se, that are very important, I think, to the creative process that writers can dig into. I think this is one that, as you said, you know, lots of people can take something away from. And I think that even when you start to touch on the stuff about kind of writing as a refuge and writing as, you know, I mean, there are disciplines of like writing as therapy, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, I mean, I feel like writing can be a form of therapy for sure. And like talking about writing or talking about creativity is also very therapeutic. It's like a way of kind of connecting to our more reflective, more imaginative, more empathetic selves. And it's a way of kind of, you know, maybe getting outside ourselves a little bit as well. And I think that there's a lot in common with therapy there. It's also when you're writing, you're kind of conjuring different parts of yourself that you maybe don't have as much, you know, direct contact with most of the time. Like you might, when you're writing a villain or writing a really scary, terrible scenario, you're connecting to a really dark part of yourself. And, you know, there's a part of all of us that is kind of destructive or you know, ready to just burn everything down. And it can be actually very cathartic to just like get into that headspace and be like, okay, I'm writing this fictional, you know, destruction and mayhem. And it's actually kind of allowing me to channel this part of me that I probably shouldn't put out in the world in reality, because people tend to frown on you like burning their cities down. I don't know why. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yes. Well, congrats on the work, of course. I know that we have a limited amount of time today because you are very busy. I was just rereading the New York Times book review from Victor's Greater Than Death, and I thought,
oh yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I thought this last paragraph or last couple sentences, I just want to read out loud and get your feelings about it. But this reviewer said, if this seems odd in the context of a galactic war, the whole book is an argument about why it shouldn't be. Compassion and empathy are ostensibly what the main character and her friends are fighting for, pitting the jewel tones of their complexity against a pale and violent sameness. I thought that was a pretty nicely worded sentence and a very nice review.
Yeah, I was so happy with that review. I mean, that was Amal El-Mohtar, who is one of my writing heroes, and that review was just so incredibly generous. Yeah. And I loved what she had to say about the book. It just made me, you know, really happy to see that. And I obviously that's what you hope for when you write a book. I think that, you know, something I always try to do in my writing, which I think I'm definitely not alone in, I think a lot of people try to do this, especially in speculative fiction, is kind of juxtapose like the small and personal against the huge and epic. And like that's, to some extent, that's every superhero story ever. Like every superhero story is about like Peter Parker dealing with like Aunt May's, you know, having to afford her prescriptions and dealing with like his job at the Daily Bugle, while also, you know, struggling against like these giant lizard people are trying to destroy the city. And it's like these two different stakes are kind of set against each other. And like one is the larger stakes are obviously more urgent for more people, but you know, the Aunt May and the Daily Bugle matter to Peter Parker. And I feel like that kind of juxtaposition is where I really love to spend a lot of time, because I feel like the small and personal makes the big and, you know, epic more meaningful. And mm-hmm. I like to play around with that. I like to actually have characters who are like, look, my personal kind of emotional stuff is actually important. And it's not, there's no point in fighting to save the galaxy if I'm not going to actually, it's like that whole, if I can't dance, I don't want to be a part of your revolution kind of, you know, we need personal, we need human connection. We need each other. We need emotional fulfillment or else, you know, what are we fighting for? And how are we going to keep ourselves from turning into, you know, basically destructive monsters like the people we're fighting against, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, just quickly returning back to Never Say You Can't Survive, you do talk some extensively about imposter syndrome. And I feel like we've been talking about that for years. I've spoken yeah. with a neuroscientist about it. And, you know, just talk a little bit about why kind of every writer, no matter their station in life, kind of faces this their own monster, right?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, imposter syndrome. I feel like there's one or two people I know who just claim that they don't have imposter syndrome. I think almost everybody experiences imposter syndrome, though. I think it's just normal. It's part of being a writer, like I say in the book. And it, you know, it's one of those things where it changes over time. Like when you're starting out as a writer, you might feel like, okay, I haven't published anything yet. Why am I even calling myself a writer? You know, gosh, I'm at this fancy writer event with all these people who've been published in, you know, the New Yorker or whatever. And I haven't even been published in like my local, you know, church newsletter or whatever. You know, there's that imposter syndrome. And then once you actually get some recognition, once you've been published in fancier places or you've gotten, you know, some notice from like the world, that it's like, oh my gosh, I'm getting, you know, publication or acclaim or whatever. And obviously these people don't realize that I'm actually a fake and that I'm, you know, not real. And that I'm like, you know, that I don't deserve any of this. And they're going to find out and it's going to be really bad and I'm going to be caught or whatever. And I think in some ways, you know, imposter syndrome kind of scales up as you, or changes, I guess, just changes its shape as you get more success. And it's just, you never escape from it. It just keeps going. Yeah. It's kind of inescapable. And I think that, you know, part of it is that we are all really hard on ourselves also, because writing is one of those things where it's really hard to tell if you're being successful or not, like most of the time. Like it's right. really hard to tell if you're doing well. Even if you have some like objective measure of success that tells you you're doing well, it's just really hard. It's like, and it, you know, we're all really insecure all the time. We're creating these like pieces, we're putting these pieces of ourselves out into the world and being like, hey, here's something I dreamed up when I was, you know, in the shower or whatever. Would you like to spend, you know, $10 on this thing I came up with while I was in the shower? And it's like, it's nerve wracking to try to turn your kind of weird dame dreams into a product that you want people to buy. It's just like weird. And there's always other writers who seem to be doing better or are like, you know, seemingly more talented or more awesome than
better marketers.
Yeah, better marketers. Or, you know, it's just like, oh my God, I'll be reading a book sometimes, often in fact, I'll be reading a book and I'll come across like a paragraph or a sentence and I'll be like, oh my God, if I could write like that, I would just like, you know, I would just never stop being proud of myself. I would just be like, oh my God. And like, I wish I could write like that. And you know, the dark side of that, or the kind of negative side of that, is to be like, now I hate this other writer because I can't write like this, or they're such a great writer, you know. And I think the positive response to that, seeing that, and just being like, well, two things. One, let me just like spend 5 minutes looking at this paragraph and how it's constructed and see what I can take from it whatever I can. And then, you know, but also recognize that everybody is different, and like, this person writes like them. I write like me. We all write differently. If we all wrote the same way, the world would be a terrible, boring, awful place. So I'm going to learn whatever I can from this other person's writing, and then recognize that I still have to write in my own style, and that, you know, whatever lesson I learned is going to be applied to in my own way, because that's my own person, you know?
Yeah, 100. Well, we appreciate your work. Thank you for your great podcast. I'll link to that. Thank you for your work with supporting indie bookstores. And, you know, we could talk all day long. I'm sure you're going to have to come back and wrap with us again in the future about the importance of storytelling and how it's going to save the human race, because we need your work. So we appreciate it.
Yeah, fingers crossed, you know?
I like it. All right. Well, Charles Jane, thank you again. And I know you have to get to an event, but yeah, we'll hopefully wrap in the future.
I would love that. Have a great day. Take care.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.